Shalom leYehudim, shalom leBnei Noach, shalom leGoyim. It's the evening of the second day, Vav b'Chodesh Malchishvan, Parashas Lech Lecha, Tavshin Pei, 5780, the evening of the first day, Sunday, 3 November 2019, webcasting from the land of Israel, paralyzed. After several weeks of relative calm, the Muslim savages in Gaza fired off some 10 missiles at Sderot early Friday evening, clearly with the intent of murdering Jews if they could. The Iron Dome system brought down 8 of the projectiles. One fell harmlessly and one smashed into the home of a Jewish family and damaged it. The family, thank God, was not physically harmed, but the evidence is plentiful that the Jews in Sderot in general over the last 2 decades have raised damaged children. The IDF is now recruiting these children, whose entire childhood was pockmarked with bouts of terrifying fear that the Goyim in Gaza were actually trying to murder them. How many times did these kids have to jump out of bed at the sound of the siren in the middle of the night, run into a bomb shelter, a safe room? They were roused in terror from their beds in the middle of the night. And Israel, with the reputation of being a Middle East superpower, has never been able to end this homicidal aggression. And the reasons for that are manifold, none of them good. I think the army that records every projectile launched at us since the year 2000, the sum these days could be around 40,000, 40,000 times. The lunatic Jew-hating Muslim Hamites in Gaza have tried to murder us, rarely succeeding, but succeeding in other ways by making Jews suffer. And why? Because the Muslims in Gaza are taught from birth that while they live in miserable slums, the Jews on the other side of the barrier live very nice lives, and that's because they stole the land on which they live from the grandparents of all those Ishmael clones with rocks in their hands and flaming bottles of gasoline. And I reason that while Israel undoubtedly has the equipment to reduce the Gaza rectangle to smoking rubble and kill thousands, it never has, for good and not so good reasons. One good reason is that the Arabs in Gaza now have lots of missiles capable of landing on Tel Aviv, and for sure, no scruples about using them. For over a year now, every Friday, in addition to routine attendance in mosques in the Strip, listening to speeches about Jews in a class with anything Hitler ever said, the attendees, the young men, afterwards go to the barrier to throw rocks at the evil Jews, as the faithful, during their pilgrimage to Mecca, act out throwing rocks at objects symbolizing the devil, with mighty Israel never having the character of self-respect that required doing whatever is necessary to end the riots. And one day I hope to understand why the IDF has never swooped over the mobs and dropped skunk bombs on them. Sticky stuff sticks to the skin. Or used live weapons to keep the rock throwers at a distance, shooting at their feet if they cross a certain line. The Friday Follies exist because Israel is psychologically incapable of solving the problem. Instead, what Israel has done is to use its high intelligence and science engineering and invented the Iron Dome system at great cost, which is clearly a failure. Yes, it's a great success in preventing physical damage, like last Friday night, but it does nothing to prevent the launching of these projectiles, whose launch is enough to strike fear in the hearts of the Jews, to terrify Jews. Last Friday night, a Jewish woman of 65 years had to run for her life, exactly perhaps like her grandmother in Poland had to run for her life from homicidal Polish maniacs. But she fell down and injured herself, this Jewess, running in terror for her life, no less than any Jewess in history. For her, at least, the resurrection of Israel has not put an end to the homicidal mania of some Goyim. It is the 21st century, but in this behavior, these Muslims attack Jews as if it was the year 1066 in Spain, in Toledo, where the Muslims butchered the entire Jewish community. It's like Algiers in the year 1805, when a diplomatic incident led to a massacre of hundreds of Jews. This year was the midpoint in Napoleon's attempt to force-feed the fruits of revolutionary France on the rest of the world, And in attacking Egypt in 1799, he needed wheat for his troops grown in North Africa, but needed a loan to pay for them, which he got from the Dey of Algiers, which he had yet to repay in that year. In June 1805, the French ambassador to Algiers tried to explain in the court of the Dey why Napoleon had yet to pay up, and the heated exchange led to the Dey slapping the ambassador with his fan. The ambassador, of course, turned on his heels and left the palace, and because he was a Jew, the locals were given license to pogrom the Jewish community. The Encyclopedia Britannica, rather Judaica, said 200 to 500 Jews were murdered. Israel has never understood that the Muslims in Gaza are implacable. There's nothing Israel can do to eradicate their chronic attempts to murder us, which is what these rockets are all about. Following the barrage on Friday, for the umpteenth time, our leaders, Bibi Netanyahu and Benny Gantz and Naftali Bennett, ever faithful to the Israeli ethos and its glorification of the army, nonetheless, they all said, more or less, a major operation is inevitable, but they never call for one, because they know at some level of intellection, such an operation would have no useful goal. So they kill a lot of Arabians, and we lose, God forbid, more young men in uniform, and a ceasefire is eventually arranged. But then what? What Israelis fantasize without knowing they do that is that the bad guys in Gaza, the ones in control, have to be liquidated, like al-Baghdadi, as bin Laden was liquidated, and in their place will come the good and nice Ishmaelites. Now oppressed by the current regime, they will emerge, take over, and turn Gaza into a friendly neighbor. The commentary today in the secular Israeli MSN was the usual. Who fired those rockets? This is concerned them. Was it Islamic Jihad? Not Hamas. Hamas, after all, was recently stuffed with more tens of millions of dollars in cash brought in suitcase by a fellow Arabian from Qatar. No, Hamas is now the good guys, and it's Islamic Jihad that is responsible. The solution to the endless violence is easy to prescribe, less easy to make happen. The solution is the driving of the Arabs in the Strip out of the Strip, which could be done peacefully by ceasing to sustain these Jew killers who fire these rockets at us. Israel is paralyzed, for it has lost the spirit of the Zionists, who had given up on the Goyim and chose to return to the barren wastes of the Jewish people's biblical home. And there they would have a military to defend themselves from homicidal Goyim. The first Zionists also believed that all the land was theirs, including what became the Gaza Strip. Israelis no longer know that. There's something truly pathological in a psychological sense, psychological being a word deriving from the Greek word for soul, that Israel participates in this sick relationship, supplying the rocket launcher boys with money, food, water, electricity. It's a sickness, a krankheit in Yiddish, in the sickness in the Israeli spirit. Today in Israel Hayom newspaper, their Arab affairs expert, Yoav Limor, called the leaders in Gaza Palestinian patriots, not to defend them, this is not a leftist operation, that newspaper, but just to categorize them, oblivious to the very names of their organizations, which are religious names. On Friday, an Israeli youth organization, the Secular Israeli Scouts, came to the Gaza envelope for a jamboree, 600 of them, expecting the fun of camping out together, who were forced to rapidly reboard the buses that brought them and flee the rocket barrage, young Jews likewise, in fear for their lives. On his Twitter account, Benny Gantz opined that we must now renew the assassination policy, return to taking out the Muslim leaders like Sheikh Yassin, the engineer, like al-Baghdadi, which of course provides no solution, only a temporary pause as the savages regroup and come up with another leader. Naftali Bennett said that there's no reason for a stronger response in Gaza. This would lead to unnecessary spinning, meaning explaining, which thought I do not quite understand, but I do experience it as another excuse for not doing what needs to be done. Stop supplying the enemy. with what he needs to continue making our lives miserable, make him leave the Gaza Strip. But of course, Israel today is constitutionally incapable of doing that. In fear they will be disliked and smeared as racist, fascist thieves of the very Palestinians they foolishly helped to create. Israel must publicly claim it is the legal landlord of the Gaza rectangle and wants the homicidal Muslim squatters trespassing on our property to go live someplace else. Yes, Israel is a society spiritually paralyzed, for like the liberals in the left in the West these days, whose big ideas over the last few centuries have played themselves out, all failing big time, the Zionism that brought this state into being is also long gone. Today's Israelis are simply no longer Zionists. At the beginning, across the board, religious, secular, left, right, all shamelessly claimed all the land west of the Jordan River is rightfully the property of the Jewish people. And not one of the pioneers, not one ever said one word about any Palestinians who would suffer because of the Zionist movement. No guilt about that, and that was because the country was so empty, it was not necessary to dispossess any Arabs, who in any case remained largely nomadic, unsettled. In the 1905 census for Jerusalem, still under Ottoman Turkish rule, there's no reference to Palestinians, there's no reference to Arabs. Under the so-called millet system, you were a member of your religious community. Jerusalem has no meaning other than a religious one, and one was either a Jew, a Christian, or a Muslim, and so the census was conducted. And not only that, recently I was discovering some more history about Jerusalem, and evidently, before the Zionist enterprise got off the ground, Jerusalem was not only a slum, disease-ridden, rat-infested, garbage everywhere, animal droppings untended to in the street, human waste. Because of this, Jerusalem stunk to high heaven under the Muslims, because contrary to the propaganda, Jerusalem was never a city holy to them. Nothing holy ever happened in Jerusalem. The only meaning it has in Islam is the destination one night on a flying horse of Mr. Muhammad, really a way station on his way up to heaven, where he learned he was the final and greatest Jewish prophet of all. And, of course, it was proof that Allah no longer had a special covenant with Al-Yahud. Now he had it with the believers in the one true faith, the correct religion, the completion of the revelation of Ibrahim. This is what the violence against us is all about, with post-religious Israelis insensate to the religiosity of the enemy, who, because his hatred is religious, cannot be placated with material gifts, with more suitcases bulging with cash from Qatar, even an improved standard of living in Gaza. A lot of progressive Israelis want to see Gaza thrive, and this will soften the hearts of the Palestinians toward us. Last week on Tuesday, Benny Gantz said that if he becomes Israel's next prime minister, in a related issue domestically, he will, quote, embrace all streams of Judaism. We are part of an inspiring, colorful mosaic of culture and traditions. I will nurture this pluralism. I will promote the implementation of the Western Wall that was scuttled by the Haredim, close quote. This is such pablum. What his target audience understands by pluralism is, don't tell me what to do. I'll define Judaism as I choose to. The Sabbath is a day of rest, and my day of rest means driving to the beach in my string bikini. Gantz, like too many Israelis, is also painfully unaware that the area at the wall set aside for the so-called pluralists, for their pluralist prayer at the Western Wall, whose expansion Netanyahu canceled, it's never utilized. I'm a regular at the wall and never see anybody there. When Gantz speaks of all the streams in Judaism, he's parroting the Reform, whose stream, we all know now, is drying up and washing up on the riverbanks of history as just another schismatic group like the Sadducees, the Karaites, the Essenes, the Samaritans. Because it is not authentic Jewishness, not when 70% of the nubile Reform youth marry non-Jews. That is the original sin of the Jewish people, by the way. We are now reading, thank God, again, the magnificent book called in English Genesis. And soon we will see Avraham concerned that his son Isaac marry the right kind of woman. And then Isaac and his wife Rivka will be concerned that their Jacob marry within the culture. 1,000 years later, Ezra and Nehemiah returned from exile in Babylon to discover the dreadful intermarriage rate of those who remained in Jerusalem and order they divorce their non-Jewish wives. Reform Judaism, so-called, exposes itself as a false Jewishness by shrinking at warp speed thanks to intermarriage and the misunderstanding of true Jewishness, which, for example, prescribes separate spaces for men and women at prayer, a regulation that has nothing to do with demeaning women. Reform Judaism is simply not Judaism. And for the sake of intellectual rigor alone, Benny Gantz, no serious Jew, should not be pretending that it is. And there seems to be a connection between his inability to think clearly, Jewishly, about Gaza and his ignorance of the reality of non-Orthodox Jews in the diaspora, who are on the way out, and no good can come from catering to them. Recently, a columnist in Ma'ariv, I think, Avi Benayu, a veteran in the Army for 25 years and for public relations, I think, he praised the recently retired Chief of Staff, Gadi Eisenkot, for supporting the continuing relationship between American Jews and not letting this relationship weaken, versus the reality that the same 70% marrying out voted against Trump. And that is the future for non-observant American Jews. I had a conversation last night with an American Jewish journalist living in Israel. I'm guessing she's 30-something, who even grew up in a, I assume, modern Orthodox community in the States, who had never heard of Haji Amin al-Husseini, Yasser Arafat of the Arabs here in the 1920s, 30s, 40s, 50s, whose terrorists murdered Jews here in the 1930s, and afterwards he fled the British in 1937 for ultimately Berlin, where he lived in a posh townhouse stolen from a Jewish family and was paid $10,000 a month by Hitler to do shortwave propaganda broadcasts in Arabic to the Middle East, extolling the greatness of Hitler and the Nazis and their mutual drive to kill all the Jews. She never heard of him, which just goes to show that Zionist history is ephemeral. and that the only real eternal Jewish identity is the religious one. You're listening to www.deprogramprogram.com, broadcasting from the hills of Judea. I'm Shai Ben-Tekoa. So, continuing the saga of Mordechai Kedar's honest pain at being slandered and the disconcerting anomalies in the official narrative of the murder of Yitzhak Rabin that others had remarked on. Last Thursday on TV, Channel 13 News interviewed Dr. Kedar, who did not shy away from claims we have heard for 24 years now. I think the security camera video shows Yigal Amir shooting Rabin in the back, as he said, but all the doctors, he said, said the entry wounds were in the chest. And why did it take 20 minutes to get Rabin to the hospital, which is a few streets away, basically? He also said that Rabin arrived at the hospital in an intensive care ambulance. When and why was the transfer from limousine to ambulance made? He also spoke of bloodstains on the front seat and the burial that very night of two people in the Arkon Cemetery that Kedar believes knew too much. This is where I stop short. The plot thickens and gets complicated. Still, it's true, if it is true, that all the doctors saw entry wounds in the chest, number one, and that Amir shot from behind, this is reason enough to demand, as he did at that rally, the declassification of documents. If indeed they corroborate the official narrative, no harm will have been done except to Dr. Kedar's reputation. I think the motivation for using his minute and a half on the podium to say what he did at that rally in support of Prime Minister Netanyahu, his motivation has been overlooked, but it's right there in his description of being slandered, tarnished, and what he might have said is that as the right was collectively smeared and hated, and in particular Netanyahu, whom the Rabin family disgustingly still accuses of calling for Yitzhak's murder, so again today, Bibi's political enemies are smearing him, in this case with crimes of serious corruption, when serious jurists dismiss these charges as what I see as normal behavior by politicians. It's in a class, this behavior in Israel, with the Democrats in the States calling Trump not just corrupt, but a traitor, a secret Russian agent, which, if true, means not only a reason to remove him from office, but stand him in front of a firing squad. In other words, I see Moti Kedar, who I know slightly, as standing up today to the same miserable leftists who slandered Netanyahu 24 years ago with guilt for that murder, which also calls for the death penalty. Kedar is also of the national religious camp and remembers, as I do, the atmosphere here in 1995 after the assassination, in which the left snarled in a hatred of the settlers. Indeed, one of the Oslo architects, the communist son of a communist journalist, Ron Pundak, once confessed that the real purpose of Oslo was less a belief in peace with the Palestinians than ending the resettling of Judea and Samaria by religious Jews. Both Pundak and Balin were proud atheists. Which brings us back to the role of religion in our lives. Versus the veneer of nationalism for Zionist Jews in conflict with Palestinian nationalists. On the surface, this is what the conflict is about. Underneath, it's the same hostility in Muslims towards Jews throughout history, and hostility by Jews in the contemporary left against classical Jewishness. I think I once mentioned on a webcast that I began college as an English major, which is how I got to know Edward Said, the Lebanese charlatan, but in part thanks to his boring class, I changed my major when I came to see religion as the most powerful force in history.
Family.
Okay, that's it for this first night of the week, and I'll be back, God willing, on Tuesday. Until then, Laila Tov, Meretz Yisrael.